diversity, diversity, diversity.
Years have caused confusion. I'll crack its board.
Well, hello everyone. Sorry for the slight delay today. I have had to withdraw to a bedroom, so I'm stuck sitting on a bed recording this due to the fact that I'm not at the lodge, I'm back at home, and due to various comings and goings, I've had to come in here. But anyway, I've got a couple of things I want to talk about, and then we're going to get into the questions for this week. First of all, the revamp era has been going spectacularly well. I thought I'd give you a bit of an update on how things are going. I'm going to click on my analytics here. I'm mainly going through this to prove the doubters wrong. Of course, the one way to, absolutely motivate an individual like me, who has impossible masculine traits, such as overcoming all odds, is to doubt whether my plans would work. Well, I can tell you that the past month, so that is from September the 10th to now, so roughly 10 days or a week past the last unpopular opinions, which was then paywalled. So these stats are absolutely, true to the revamp era. We are 53% more views than usual. That is 190,000 more views than usual, more new subscribers than usual, more revenue than usual. So all of you who doubted that I could pull off the revamp, that had you, didn't it? I'm talking about you sitting there right now. That had you, didn't it? Because just like Vince McMahon and just like Sir Alex Ferguson, I am driven more than anything else to prove the doubters wrong. And I followed their various templates, and just like them, I successfully pulled off yet another revamp. So anyway, that's out of the way. For some reason, entropy sound was on. A couple of things I want to mention before we get to the questions for this week, which is, first of all, sometimes on Twitter you have a tweet that surprises you by going viral. And this is one of the more random ones. I mean, I constantly tweet stuff like this. But this one, for some reason, 7,800 likes in the past day. I said, often you'll read about guys in the early 20th century just living in a hotel for years. I think about this. 7,800 likes. Now, I don't really understand why that tweet in particular. Why did that tweet in particular go viral? I don't know. But I do think about the lifestyle of, you often hear about it. Nikola Tesla is a famous example. Oscar Wilde, obviously. Ernest Hemingway. There are tons of examples of guys in the early 20th century, like, oh, they just lived in the penthouse suite of the Waldorf Astoria for 20 years. Or, in a Park Lane in the Dorchester Hotel in London, they lived for 5 years. And I was talking to them, and I actually discovered that one of Mrs. AA's relatives did this. They lived in a hotel in London for about 4 months. And apparently her parents, when they were younger, said, well, rather than just living in that hotel, why don't you put a deposit down so we can buy a house, rather than spending all that money on the hotel. And fair enough to their relative, they did actually put down that deposit. But I do find that really interesting, that people used to just live in hotels. And I've become kind of curious about it. Like, for example, did like were hotels as expensive as they are now, and these people were just absolutely loaded, or has the real price of a hotel room gone up comparatively over time? Now, I've not been able to find out whether like which way around it was. I did start to have a look, and apparently Nikola Tesla was in like Oscar Wilde was in tremendous debt to these various hotels that he was staying in. And the most famous story that comes up when you look it up is that in order to pay off a $20,000 debt that he'd racked up at the Waldorf Astoria, Nikola Tesla paid his debts with a death ray machine that he created. So that is the most I've been able to find out about it. But I do find it extraordinary that people used to stay in hotels. And so I'd like to know really whether is it just these people are fabulously wealthy, or is it that the real price of a hotel room comparatively has gone up over time? Although people, speaking of Alex Ferguson, people were telling me that apparently when Jose Mourinho was the manager of Manchester United, going back a couple of years, he spent his entire time as manager of Manchester United living in a hotel, which I thought was extraordinarily based. So there we are. I kind of love the special one for that. I've always loved Mourinho as well as Vince and Alex Ferguson. I love the arrogance of Mourinho. The other thing I wanted to talk about before, oh yes, I should mention Dubai courses at the academic agency, the Trivium, buy it now. If you want to, and again, I do think that whether you're in school, whether you're a student, whether you are just interested, or whether you're at work, doesn't matter what line of work you do really, the core skills of the Trivium will help you level up in all sorts of ways. It could help you, especially if you're a writer. Could get help you get your first book contract. It could help you, the clarity of your prose in the email could get you a promotion at work. I mean, I can't promise any of these things, but I just cannot imagine any walk of life that would not be improved by taking the Trivium today. Buy it now. But the other thing I wanted to mention really quickly was this picture of Elon Musk that kind of taken the internet by storm in the past couple of days. And I was really haunted by this picture. And I've got a take. And in fact, there's various different things you can think about it. But like, there's Donald Trump. There's Elon Musk in a moment of pure joy, ecstasy, leaping. I mean, look how far he is off the ground, leaping. I mean, he's about a clear foot off the ground there, leaping in joy behind Don there, behind the God Emperor. And initially I thought, my gosh, this is like this is like really pathetic. But then I thought about it a different way and came up with a different take, which also went kind of viral. It got 1,400 likes, this one, not quite as hot as the the one about the hotel room, but still pretty hot. And I wrote, this man, and this got retweeted by, among others, Milo, Jack Posobiec, and people like this. Okay, so I've picked up a ton of random kind of MAGA people on Twitter in the past day or so. Anyway, I said, this man has achieved everything, talking about Elon Musk, conquered many women, fathered many children, sent rockets to the moon, become the richest man ever to live, and yet in the presence of the king, he allows himself to become a peasant, a background cheerleader. LeFou to Gaston. Magnificent. So this is a different way of thinking about this. You know, I guess in a more Carlylean sense, or in the sense of like what hierarchy means. I mean, this is not like Elon Musk is, you know, nobody watching this show, practically nobody in the world could dare call Elon Musk a loser, given what he's achieved in his life. I mean, he's achieved more than any of us ever will. You know, he's put a man in space, among other things. Yet there he is, as LeFou to Gaston. And if you don't get that reference, I'll just share a picture of LeFou and Gaston. Where's LeFou and Gaston? There, from Beauty and the Beast, if you remember. Here's a decent picture of Gaston, and this is LeFou. Do you remember from Beauty and the Beast? So that's who I was referring to. But then, of course, there's a different way of thinking about this again. So that was the kind of positive spin on it. That's the sort of spin that will get you retweeted by Jack Posobiec, who's also known as End Wokeness on Twitter. But there's another way of thinking about it as well, which is, one thing I'll just say about this, I think it's worth pointing out and worth thinking about from a kind of my general take on American politics, which is that it is just pro wrestling, right? American politics is pro wrestling. I've got my video Kamala Harris as a jobber coming out tomorrow morning. So that's half an hour long, by the way. So that one should be some fun for all of you. But, you know, I have my view that US politics is just pro wrestling. And I can't help but notice that MAGA is becoming more and more like a pro wrestling stable. So if you remember in the 80s where Hogan had his buddies like Tugboat or Brutus the Barber Beefcake, or remember Hogan's always got some like little buddies. JD Vance and Elon Musk now have almost become like little buddies. It's like they are our point of view characters, so that, you know, we like, it's like, oh, look at me, I'm hanging out with the God Emperor, and vicariously you put yourself as the position of as a fan of the big star Trump. You then put yourself in that position. That is really what Tugboat or Brutus Beefcake or various other characters back in 80s WWF, that's what they were. They were a way of allowing the fan to vicariously kind of be mates with Hogan. And this is the same, especially I think Vance very much is the DR, the kind of online right self insert character, isn't he? Elon Musk is performing this role as well. I find that very interesting, to the point where I really do think that Vince McMahon may be secretly booking Trump. Here is here are some of Hogan's buddies. Look, there's Tugboat. Do you remember? Boop, boop. There's Brutus Beefcake, JD Vance, Mr. T, do you remember? And Hillbilly Jim. And I just find it really interesting that you get all of these like little buddies now. There's Tulsi Gabbard, she's one of Trump's crew, Amber Rose, RFK. I mean, Trump has got a stable of people behind him now, of recognizable MAGA stars. That's very pro-wrestling indeed. So anyway, that's one way to think about kind of Elon Musk's jump leap for joy. There is, of course, another way of thinking about it. And that is really, it's like, well, after this little trip that Elon did with Ben Shapiro, do you remember he went on the trip? He has kind of really been full throttle in terms of I've pointed out all the slop accounts he promotes. Somebody made a very good list. I only listed like four or five. Somebody's made like a definitive list. There was a Elon Musk taking a trip with Benjamin Netanyahu. And, you know, ever since this little trip, not only has Musk become like an all-out Trump supporter, but he's also massively promotes GadSad and Libs of TikTok and all of these kind of usual suspects on Twitter on a regular basis. Let me see if I can find that list that was made the other day, because I thought it was pretty phenomenal how many names were on it and how many names on that list were associated with you know, with this particular operation. So I mean, there's just tons of them. Blair White, Defiant Elves, End Wokeness, Gays Against Groomers, Libs of TikTok, Viva Fry. I mean, this is a whole network of people. Dave Rubin, Charlie Kirk, Caitlyn Jenner. I mean, there's so Barry Weiss, of course, Ashley Sinclair. These are all people that Elon Musk directly promotes all the time. Shapiro himself, of course. Jordan Peterson. Jordan Peterson's massively one, of course. DC Drano, Eli David, who's very hardcore on Twitter. Naomi Wolf, GadSad, Musk was literally just shilling GadSad's book to 190 million people. You know, he's never done that for one of my books. But it just so happens, you know, GadSad, Ian Chung Lee, of course, Jack Posobiec, Russell Brand now. There are so many of them. Just lots of people. Laura Loomer. Laura Loomer's another one. Joel Berry, James Lindsay, we talked about him. There could be some questions about him this week because there was a video on him that I did. I mean, this is a very extensive Tommy Robinson, who actually mentioned me on Twitter the other day in a funny context. If you haven't seen that, let me know and I'll see if I can pull it up, because I got about 100 messages. I logged in one morning and I got about 100 messages from people saying, have you seen this? Robinson has tweeted out your book. So anyway, there is another way of reading what that leap was and what has become of Elon Musk, kind of summed up by this recent speech by Donald Trump, which he gave yesterday on the eve of 10/7.
We will remove the jihadist sympathizers and Jew haters. We're going to remove the Jew haters who do nothing to help our country. They only want to destroy our country. And we will never let the horrors of October 7th be repeated here on American soil. We will not let that happen. And we will solve the problem.
There you go. So, all right. So that is something I want to do. There's another way of thinking about it. And the thing is that I'll be honest, I'm kind of caught, because if I was American, there's no doubt that I would not be. I mean, I'd be voting for Donald Trump, because the alternative, Kamala Harris, the Democrats, is just too awful to contemplate. But if you ask me, Americans are kind of caught between a rock and a hard place on this. It's like, well, the Democrats are just awful. They have nothing to offer Americans whatsoever. The MAGA lot are basically like a kind of Israel fan club at this time, at this moment, and it's just more and more overt and in your face on a daily basis, and it's almost kind of a humiliation ritual in a way, if you ask me. But they're promising to close the border. They're saying, well, look, you know, if you support us for a while, we'll let you be racist for a bit, you know, whether you believe them or not, is another question, but really that is the, I had a short the other day about false dichotomies and about trying to reject the false dichotomies that are always forced on you in a kind of educational setting. You know, typically in a university, the professor will give you two choices, and usually the choice is between a stupid idea and an even stupider idea, which and you're kind of being steered to choose one of the two. The truth is that usually the dichotomy is false. Usually the dichotomy is being forced on you, for some other agenda. And unfortunately, that is what democracy is. It is a false choice given to you by those in power, and they're trying to steer you one way or the other. I mean, I do think that the powers that be want you to go for Trump this time in Washington. But there are other forces that, you know, would prefer a Democrat government. So, there's every possibility that the Democrats could pull shenanigans and so on. But I don't know. There's a lot of signs that they want Trump. And, I mean, if they really, all that stuff about, well, if you don't get Trump, it's the last election, it's going to be over, etc. There's some truth to that, because the Democrats are that awful. The Democrats literally are in a position now where they're importing thousands, millions of illegal people all over America, and they have made the rules such that you don't even need to be a citizen to vote. So basically, the Democrats' view is America is not a real country, and it's racist to enforce basic laws like you have to be a citizen to vote. Well, that is just an untenable cloud cuckoo Alice in Wonderland nonsense position, right? So if it's up against that versus, okay, this dude, he particularly loves Israel and he could facilitate World War III, but he's going to enforce some basic laws, it's a no-brainer. You're going to go for Trump. And that is, I can see years in the chat. I mean, there's no other option, really. You're kind of, you don't have any other choice. So, but I can see an accelerationist argument being like, well, Trump would save the regime, so therefore go for Kamala. I can see that from a kind of universal point of view. But let's face it, you've got a life to lead. Many of you have got kids and families and so on. And it's all, theoretically you'd say, well, acceleration. But 4 years of Kamala Harris, so you have to balance off those short term, actually having to lead your life and, make the best world possible for your family against the longer term trend. I mean, and let's face it, Trump is not going to fix all the problems in America anyway. He might just make it more functional for a while, So anyway, that's my, I just wanted to talk about that. And I'll get on to the questions now. And as ever, I will start with the super thanks, then I'll do the super chats. And if we run out, the show will end, use it or lose it, as I say. And we're going to start with a super thanks that was put on these shorts. Now, I've been putting out these shorts every morning. So at 8 a.m., there's a short, and at 9 a.m., there's my video that comes out every day, Monday to Friday. This week, there's not going to be a Thursday video because my Thursday video went out on the weekend. That was the one comparing Iran and Israel. I put it out early because at that time, it was not clear what was going to happen. Of course, nothing ever happened, so I probably could have waited, but it's hard to tell in the moment. So I thought I'd get it out, is what I thought. And so there's not going to be a video this Thursday. I do have a video planned where I want to look at China and its involvement in current world affairs and so on, but it's going to take a bit more research, and rather than rush it, I'm going to get it out next Thursday. I mean, it's not like there's, you know, there's been tons of stuff I've released the past few days, so you can use Thursday to catch up. But anyway, every day I've been doing these pieces to camera, these 1 minute shorts, and somebody sent a super thanks on why historical films get facts wrong. And he's said, I would not suggest that you immediately believe the opposite of what you're told regarding history. Your opponents should do a good job building credibility by presenting information which is well evidenced and corroborated most of the time. Essentially, they should present you with the mundane truth a vast majority of the time so that they can trick you at strategically significant moments. Well, I would agree with that in theory and in principle, but that is assuming that your opponents are these super duper smart people. In my considered opinion, after studying these things for many years, 9 times out of 10 they just lie blatantly in your face. I mean, you've seen what happened with the 2020 election, most of you, and the projection and the level of kind of just sheer balls out gall to state things which are the complete opposite of what is true. My friend Binary Surfer sometimes talks about it's always projection with the left. You've heard that. It's always projection with the left. Well, it's basically that principle scaled up. And I don't want to get into too many historical specifics, but a lot of the time the move is to accuse your opponent exactly of that thing which you are guilty. So it's almost always a one-to-one exact inversion. So yeah, I mean, I would agree. It would behoove, you know, the best way to do it would be to tell the truth most of the time and then to change little details. But that is not how these people operate. These people operate like they always go for the balls out complete lie, in my experience. So yeah. I will carry on. JC Schmuck says, WC Schmuck says, this is on the woke right James Lindsay is mental video, which came out on the weekend. There was a bit of a bonus one. I mean, if you haven't seen that, James Lindsay, when I say he's mental, I don't mean he's just a shit lib giving out shit takes. I mean, he's accusing Aaron McIntyre of being part of a secret cult that is trying to summon the archangel Saint Michael as a secret ploy in the service of Ahriman and Lucifer. I wish I was making that up, but it is as mental as it sounds. James Lindsay has gone mad, friends. And it was really interesting watching comments to that video come in, because obviously, you know, regular fans of this channel will just come in and be like, okay, yeah, James Lindsay's lost it. But I deliberately kept the, you know, usually with a video, you state the thing up front, right? You state the big thing up front, because most people watch like the first 5 minutes and then there's a trail off in views. But in that video, I deliberately kept the most mental stuff as a reveal for the end, right? Because I wanted to see how many people would just kind of de facto come to the aid of James Lindsay. And there were quite a few of them, James Lindsay fans, who were coming in. And then I just replied to them, I'm like, watch this to the end. Are you going to really tell me that I have to really take the view seriously or come up with a rational counter explanation for this guy calling my friends secret demon worshippers? Fucking Aaron McIntyre is a secret Catholic cult of Saint Michael demon worshipper, is he? And I have to take that as a normal argument as a from an intellectual equal, do I? No, I don't. So I found that really interesting, that whole process of seeing how the James Lindsay fans, bizarrely, he does have some fans apparently, and they were coming in, running to the defense of Lindsay. And then, you know, when I go back and forth with them, it was interesting that some of them were like, yeah, okay, he's genuinely lost it. Or some of them were like, but some of them doubled down. Some of them were like, no, you've just kind of arrogantly dismissed this. Why are you really entertaining the fact that your friends may be secret demon worshippers? So that was a trip. Anyway, W.C. Schmuck says, if anyone is the origin of the right's ideas, it's your takes that are consistently stolen. Remember, everyone, each time an OG Roland Rat tweet is stolen, five children in Africa starve. Well, you know, for many of these people, Schmuck, that would be an incentive, wouldn't it? Think of the children and we'll retweet first. Also, make sure to buy a course at the academic agency. Buy it now, buy it now, buy it now. I'm not paying these people to say this. They're actually giving me money to say these things. So, well, thank you very much for that, Schmuck. Well, I mean, it's just part and parcel. It's not always a case that people steal takes, I don't think. Sometimes something will just be in the ether, or sometimes you'll come to a natural conclusion and other people will come to the same conclusion at the same time. Other times, I put enough of a signature in there that you'll be able to tell if it's taken from me or not, right? I mean, I've been kind of jokingly having this I've been jokingly having this pretend kind of Monday Night Wars thing with a guy called Richard the Fourth, who makes like decent videos. He's pretty good at playing the algo. He's got good thumbnail game. And I've been, I'm kind of interested in this guy because he doesn't seem connected to anyone. And somebody was saying, well, in some of his videos, Richard the Fourth has used the phrase boomer truth regime. I'm like, okay, well, that is a sig, like, there are some things which are just takes in the ether. There are other things where you know where it came from, right? And if it's a phrase like boomer truth regime, you know it came from me. Or I don't know, when zero seats was a thing, well, you know that that was something I started saying on here and then it took off. So usually when it's a signature thing of mine, there's a breadcrumb, there's a trail there, because it's a phrase or it's something that is, you know, very AA. Other times there are just correct takes where 10 people can have the correct take at the same time, right? And that's just in the ether. So you can't always say that it's stolen, okay? Now, if you suddenly have your favorite podcast talking about how they think Kamala Harris is a jobber, it'll be like, okay, well, that's an AA signature take, you know? So you get that, I think. Folger Interim says, this was on last week's office hours, but it came in after the show went out. He says, I've been a long-term viewer and following your shift away from libertarianism, and all your arguments seem to be based on the libertine individual self-expression branch of libertarianism, not the incentives and consequences / social Darwinist branch, which I always held. Would it be possible to have a conversation with you over this branch of libertarians, which I think none of your criticisms apply to, or alternatively have a conversation with J.F. Garapé, who is this type of libertarian? Well, J.F. Garapé blocked me a long time ago because he decided that he wanted to be loyal to Keith, Joel, and Nick in that whole thing. And I've made it very clear for a very long time that I just do not work with those people because I have various skepticisms about them all. And this is just kind of hard, fast rule of mine. I just flat block anyone who tries to defend them, tries to argue the toss. Listen, I'm not here for a debate at all. Just not interested, you know, when it comes to those sorts of things. If I identify someone who I don't want to be associated with, you can be associated with them. I won't be associated with them myself. And I've stood very hard by that rule. But JF took it upon himself to block me over that. And that is his prerogative. If I was him, of course, I'd be spending every last hour trying to find the person who is missing. But that's a different story. When it comes to libertarianism, it's not simply the social liberal, the libertinism, or the individual self-expression part. There is actually a more thoroughgoing reason to reject libertarianism, which I talk about at the start of Populist Illusion, where I say that the myth of the free market, the myth that markets ever would or ever could be separate from the state. The insight of elite theory, the insight of my essential worldview, especially since fully internalizing the lessons of elite theory, is that the political always comes first. Everything else follows. Politics is always primary. Okay, and if you start with the insight that the human being is a political animal, not just a social animal, but a always political animal, and all of the other lessons follow from that. So human beings are a political animal. In politics, there's always friend enemy. In politics, there can never be a truly neutral institution. Everything else flows from there. What I'm probably going to do on this front is I've been going over Friedrich List's excellent book recently, and I'll probably on Monday, whether it's next Monday or the Monday after, one of these Mondays, I'll make a video outlining some of the key points that List makes against libertarianism in general, bearing in mind he wrote that book in the 1840s. But yeah, so that is really my view. It's not really a problem with Austrian reasoning or the idea of Austrian economics in the abstract, or even the idea that, you know, some degree of free trade doesn't lead to greater prosperity or anything like that sort of stuff. That stuff is probably true. Market intervention does distort the signals, etc., etc. It is more the hardcore realist view that you are never going to get a situation where that doesn't happen. And so any economic principles or analyses has to start with the notion of a power block. And that's why I like List, because he starts with power and all else flows from there. It's a Machiavellian analysis. You're never going to get your equilibrium, you're never going to get your free market conditions. So that's my main problem. My other problem is something I've talked about a number of times. I think I did a whole video on it. It's called What Libertarians Get Wrong About Free Trade, and it's got Miele on the front cover. You can find that video in the archives. I think it's a public one. I don't think it's behind the paywall, where I talk about how classic comparative advantage free trade analysis, as per Ricardo, but even as per Mises, holds labor and capital constant. Right? So you don't have open borders for capital and labor. It assumes that you don't get mass immigration or mass migrations. And it also assumes that capital will be reallocated to more productive ends within the borders of a country, not that capital will relocate to Mexico or China or some other market, which is cheaper. Well, as soon as those two things don't apply, the argument for free trade collapses, isn't it? And as far as I've seen, no libertarian ever addresses this point. So if you want to put that to JF, if he's still making those sorts of arguments, I'd love to see what his answer is. Andrew Cooper says, these Friday videos, so he's talking about, Andrew Cooper is responding to the snooker video that I did with George, the fascinating legacy of British snooker. And he says, these Friday videos have been strangely cathartic for me. So thank you. This is £20 now. 20 English pounds. Lovely. He says, these Friday videos have been strangely cathartic for me. I'm around your age, and although I was never much into snooker or the Carry On films, I saw plenty, as my now deceased father was, and he gave Dandy and Beano annuals to me. So these videos have been an odd form of reconnection to him for me. Well, I'm glad, Andrew, that these Friday videos have touched you. In fact, there's been a lot of comments like that in general. And I mean, I know that the Friday videos don't get the tens of thousands of views that the other videos will do. You know, you can tell they generally don't do as well. The Ina Blyton one, the Dandy Beano, the snooker, carry-ons. But for those people who remember these things, or for these people who care about this country, I think they have kind of, you know, touched people in a different way, I guess, than whatever Keir Starmer's been up to, or whatever the latest political news is, or whatever else. Because culture is important, of course, and these are the things, slowly but surely, that are being taken away. Or the things that used to be back when we were a real country. So I'm going to carry on making those Friday videos. I think they're, in fact, one of the reasons I was a little bit late is that I got stuck looking at the career of a director called Val Guest, who directed a few films for Hammer Studios. But Val Guest also directed comedies and the Quatermass films and a number of films starring David Tomlinson, like Carry On Admiral and Up the Creek, various different things. And I was just kind of casting around for something possibly to make a video on. I'm going to have to, I mean, Halloween is coming up. Maybe I'll do something on Hammer Horror. I don't know yet. Such a big topic is the issue. Maybe just the films of Terence Fisher or something like that, but or a look at Christopher Lee or something. But yeah, I've been thinking about what to do on the Friday. This coming Friday, by the way, we have a I'm talking about high art as opposed to low art. We're talking about a painting, and I've got a very special guest coming in to say hello on Friday. So look out for that one. Look out for the Friday one this week, because a special friend of the channel is coming back to talk. Run up your thermostat with the super chat on the super thanks on Trudeau versus Starmer. This was the guest video by Black Horse that came out last Thursday. He says, Canada's biggest problem and the reason we are so cucked is that our country has never had a unified identity. This is why the Trudeaus, both of them 40 years apart, can claim there is no such thing as a typical Canadian, and that the typical leftist question of what does it actually mean to be insert European nation actually strikes a nerve in Canada. Ask a Canadian whether a working class Albertan or an upper class conservative what it means to be a Canadian, and you'll see them recoil with horror and shrink back. I've been found out. So that is a, in fact, I mean, I do think it's fair to say that whether you're whether you are Canadian, Australian, from New Zealand, or even from America, i.e. from the colonies, from the original colonial nations. I think America, maybe they've been there a bit longer, and, you know, 1776 independence. So, yeah, but if you take it all the way back to 1600, that's quite 500 years, quite a chunk of time now. But certainly for Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, it's a difficult question, because the argument in Europe is, well, if you're French, say, you'd be like, well, the French have been here for over 1,000 years from, I mean, they could literally point back to the Gauls in Roman times, or Charlemagne or something, you know, the House of Capet. That's a huge history they can draw on. It'd be like, well, of course, I'm French, I've been here for a long time. Or in this country, the British have been here for thousands of years. You know, you can point to Durham Cathedral, or you can say, well, look at Stonehenge, your ancestors built that, and they were here a long time ago. But of course, if you're in one of these places that was taken over quite recently, you can't do that. So the argument flips around, and you're actually closer to being in the position of the Israelis now, funny enough. The Israelis who are displacing the people who were there before them. Now, the Israelis got this, you know, biblical argument, oh, we were the originals, we were here 2,000 years ago, blah, blah, blah. But the fact is, everybody knows they were there, you know, only since the 40s. You know, at most from 1917 onwards, they started to trickle in. I.e. they are there as colonizers. Kind of hard to then develop an argument for why. And see, this is the problem I have with a certain strand of nationalism. I mean, Keith has got this strand. Greg Johnson has got it as well. It's like this kind of nationalism in the abstract. They'll say things like, every group by right should have homelands. This is the argument. You know, there's a kind of abstract nationalism. Every group in the world should have its own homeland. Well, this to me is kind of for the fairies, you know. I'm a realist in all ways, as I talk about many times. The history of the world is a history of conquest, history of empires. It's not a history of nations, it's a history of empires. One group of people conquering another group of people. And in fact, the number of nations that can truly say, we have been here for this many thousand years, you can count them on two hands. The Chinese, Persians, of course, where my dad is from, they've got a long and continuous history. The Indians, to some extent. You know, these are kind of civilizational blocks. The Russians have been around for a long time at this point. You know, they could have, I mean, you all heard Putin's long history lesson. To me, it is not a, there is not a kind of equal claim to say, well, I mean, I can understand a Russian being like, well, this is Russia, with Russia has stood for so many hundred years. Okay, and this is Russia. Their claim is not equal to the claim of the Ukrainian, who says, oh, well, I feel Ukrainian in my heart, therefore I deserve a homeland. These two things are not equal, right? I was born, brought up, and my mother is from a little country called Wales. Wales has not been independent for hundreds of years. In fact, the history of Wales is a history of being an oppressed and subjugated people. We were subjugated by the Romans. We were subjugated by the English. We were subjugated going all the way back, all the way back. There is not an equal claim for Wales to stand and say, oh, because, you know, just by dint of this land being here, I deserve a homeland. Well, that's just not realistic. The history of the Welsh is not that. The history of the Welsh is being part of some bigger power, whether it was the Roman Empire or the British Empire or other powers in between. That's just the truth of it. So once you start looking at it like that, sooner or later, if you're Canadian or if you're Australian or if you're from New Zealand or if you're American, you have to just come to the point, be like, well, sorry, hard cheese. At some point in history, you guys lost and we guys won. And this land is ours now. And that's just the reality of it. And that is also the reality of what's happening in the Middle East, whether we like it or not. Now, it could be that the world turns around and says, sorry, Israel, you're not allowed to do this in this day and age. Colonialism is bad from now on. Or it could be that the Israelis just get away with it and colonize, you know, get their way and get rid of the Palestinians. The truth of it is, for the Palestinians, hard cheese, you lost. The land, it may be used to have belonged to you, but it belongs to them now. That's it. This is the real truth. This is the real history of the world has been like this. Now, a lot of the time, like, so for example, with the Welsh, nobody ever decided to ethnically cleanse the Welsh. They were like, no, what we'll do is you'll just be a subject people as part of a large power block. And at various different times, we may devolve powers to allow, like, the Welsh to have their own little leader, but that leader still answers to the king. Or now the Welsh Assembly still answers to London, for example. And that is generally the better way of doing it than we're going to just ethnically cleanse this area, because that leads to, like, real problems. And the best empires in history have tended towards that strategy of being like, well, you can live under our thing now. That's what the British Empire did in most places. In the cases of Australia, Canada, and New Zealand, the fact is, and this is an argument I had with Rama Asami going back years now, the famous Pottery Rite stream. I think it was on Cigar Stream, actually, one of the early cigar streams. The fact is that most of that land was just not settled with it. Those Aboriginal peoples who were there hundreds of years ago, they just failed to settle the land. They didn't build farms. They didn't build cities. They did not settle the land. Whereas your ancestors did settle the land. So I honestly think it's a bit rich for those people to come around to be like, well, actually, this always belonged to us. Did it? How can we tell it belonged to you? And on what basis? Because a bloke had a scroll there once? Because you walked up this mountain once? I mean, you have to put something down. Otherwise, it's just wilderness. And I still really think that when push comes to shove, it comes down to those sorts of questions. The same actually is true of the South Africans who have, you know, the white South Africans I'm talking about, the Dutch ones, one of the most diddled groups in modern history, because most of South Africa was not settled by anybody. Actually, didn't have people there at all. I remember, of all people, Stefan Molyneux having a wonderful video on this back in the day called The Truth About South Africa, where he showed that the people who populate most of South Africa now came from a different part. They came from further north, and they traveled down with the Zulus and all of that. They weren't the original inhabitants at all. So in many cases in South Africa, the settlers were the original inhabitants. So you get into all those sorts of questions, which people don't want to get into. It's all too difficult and so on. But the fact of the matter is, that is what dictates it. And you have to get into those sorts of arguments if you're genuinely going to stand your ground in those sorts of places. Because on the kind of Greg Johnson, Keith Woods method of argumentation, well, really, you should just go back to Britain and give those lands back to the people who genuinely come from there. You know, I don't really go along with that kind of idea at all. So anyway, let's carry on. So let's have a look at, and that's why I've always said that I'm not a nationalist, because, you know, nationalism, especially when you start to try to reason it from first principles, always gets into these sorts of areas. And the real world is not built from first principles. The real world is built from genuine, real acting power in the world, which tends to come from empires, first and foremost. So this is a kind of a long-standing difference I have with many quote-unquote nationalists. Like, there is no nationalism in the abstract, and then, like I said, the nationalism of Russia is not equal to the nationalism of Ukraine. The nationalism of France is not equal to the nationalism of Wales. These are two different things. You know, Wales never had an empire on its own. France did. France ran up, you know, fifth of the world at one point. So they're just not the same things. All right, so let's carry on. Sheev Palpacringe says, I'm not going to lie, when I saw Elon Musk jump for joy, it did remind me of that conversation you guys had on Unpopular Opinions about individuals who receive chicken tendies from their mother. I mean, honestly, it took me a long time to come to the take that I had, trying to put a positive spin on it, but it is like it took me a long time to get over my initial reaction, which was like, what the hell are you doing? Because it was just cringy, let's face it, you know. Sheep Upper Cringe also says, I would like to congratulate you on your new channel format, because I don't have a lot of time right now, and I find it very convenient on my end. Okay, well, I'm glad. I mean, the truth is that I tend not to have time to listen to 3-4 hour streams. When I watch stuff, it's like a 10-minute video, 20-minute video. I'll watch the occasional stream. I watched Scrump and Evelyn's recent stream on Israel, basically on Israeli influence in our politics. I'd recommend it. I put it on my community tab. But even their streams tend not to go longer than an hour or so, right? So I'm trying to, you know, limit the amount of time. Even this stream has been going an hour, make it more bite-sized. A lot of people have said, well, you know, it makes it easier to share with people as well. And at the end of the day, you have to kind of get in front of different eyeballs, rather than like the same people every single week, which, you know, partly driven by necessity, but it's a good benefit, I guess, of doing videos as opposed to live streams. I was having a look, and I used to make a lot of videos up until about 2020, 2021. And then really I was a streamer for the past 3-4 years, and now I'm making videos again. So, you know, I have been a quote unquote video maker in the past, but it is a different mode of working though, and I'm still kind of getting used to it. O2 Tom says, Spencer is right about Trump, but wrong about the DNC. Yeah, I mean, basically my take with Dickie is that his critique is often correct. His critique of conservatives in America, his critique of Trumpism, his critique of MAGA and so on, is often like spot on the money. The trouble comes when he comes up with that. He then makes this move, therefore Democrats, or therefore become a libtard, or therefore read the New York Times. I listened to the show that he did with that, with the goblin, with the hobgoblin. What's his name again? Hanania. I listened to the show he did with Hanania, and that was the problem, really, is that a lot of the things they said were true, but then it was like, and therefore read the New York Times and worship midwits. I'm like, well, no, that's not the therefore. And I said that openly, and I don't mind. I feel like I know, you know, I've talked to Dickie long enough that he'll be able to take a few criticisms on like that from me at this point. But I still, I mean, even his shows are going a bit long now, but I do try to check in with him when I can. Aristocratic Al says, vote Kamala is like voting for Kemi in the Tory party. Just like we have to see the Tory party die, we must remove the Republicans. The thing is with that is that I don't think that the GOP, as bad as they are, and as, let's just say, Israelified as they are, right? Because, I mean, let's face it, they're basically like an Israel fan club at this point, the Republicans. I don't think that the Republicans as a whole, post-Trumpification or post-magification, are as bad as the Tories. Oh, I could be wrong on that assessment because I'm not there. And I see the things the Tories do. And I see the way the Tory party is operated. I just don't see the Republicans being quite as bad. And partly that's been forced on them by Donald Trump. If Donald Trump hadn't been a thing, then I could very well imagine the Republicans being where the Tory party are now, in the Mitt Romney party, right? The, you know, like, let's say if it stayed as Mitt Romney or Mitch McConnell and friends, okay? Now, a lot of those horrible swamp creatures are still around. And MAGA's got its problems, right? It's got one very big problem, which I talked about already. And Trump has got his issues. But still, Trump, on the whole, pushes politics rightwards. Whereas, like, overall, is what I'm saying. Trump does that. Whereas the Tory party consistently, for no reason whatsoever, just go left. I mean, I remember the whole thing that led to the zero seats. We'd be like, Boris Johnson, and now for my latest trick, let's do like the gayest thing we can possibly imagine. For no reason at all, let's legalize gay marriage. Nobody asked for this, but talk about trans kids or something. Like, they are mental in that way, the Tory party. Now for our latest trick, for no reason whatsoever, and don't forget, this was Boris Johnson and Priti Patel, for no reason whatsoever during COVID, we're going to let in 4 million new people. Oh, right. Oh, okay. All right. We've just trebled immigration overnight. Because my GDP or something. And as far as I can see, Trump, as bad, as many flaws as he's got, or the Republicans, as many flaws as they got, haven't done that shit. Biden did. Biden did it when he was in office, and you can say that some Republicans have been complicit in that. But the fact is that Trump didn't do that. stuff. So in my view, he's still better than our Tory party here. Far from being perfect, but better. I mean, tell me if you agree or disagree. I'll tell you what. I'll put in the chat who is better. And I'm going to put, right, Tory party or MAGA, and see if people agree with me. Let's have a look. How do I do polls in this day and age? Poll. Who is better? I'm just going to say MAGA, with everything that entails, leaping Elon Musk and all the rest of it, or Tories. And I think we'll say, I mean, it's not a false dichotomy. It's not a false dichotomy, because those are actually the choices that we have. Right? And this is why I'm saying that zero seats here, like zero seats there, isn't necessarily the strategy. If I was in America, I'd be like, right, well, MAGA's not perfect, but we can make it more based. We can make it more based. Whereas the Tory party cannot be made more based. It must be destroyed. That's my basic view. So who are the 6% going for the Tories? Who are those 6%? Is that you, Harry and Gladive, spying? Rubo and Harry and Gladive spying here? Anyway, I'll end the poll. It's clear it's over 90% MAGA. So, you know. Anyway, let's carry on. Mighty Sebastian says, "Hi, AA. I enjoyed your book video. I had a question. Why many of these books you mentioned haven't been picked up by the right-wing publishing houses? I'm thinking of the Toynbee 12-volume series, for example. Thanks." Well, you'll have to ask the actual publishers about that. I know Mike from Imperium is very diligent. In many cases, they may still be in copyright. Somebody probably owns the copyright of Toynbee, for example. I think isn't his daughter, his granddaughter still active in the press? But somebody will own the copyright of Toynbee. And even if they're not kind of doing anything with it, you can't just republish a book if it's still in copyright. And Toynbee is probably within that 75-year. I think it's like 75 years from their death. When did Toynbee die? So that'll be the reason why Toynbee hasn't come back out. Captain Smith says, "It turns out Starmer can give a heartfelt speech, but only about October the 7th and not the girls in Southport. Imagine my shock." Yeah, it's funny how that happens, isn't it? Every politician finds a heart when it comes to October the 7th, but not when it's our people being slaughtered. Absolute Ultra says, "Congratulations on the success with the revamp. I didn't doubt it for a second." Well, thanks for your faith, Absolute Ultra. "What do you think the future of British traditionalism is, especially as our one obvious hope seems to be rather tame?" Well, the thing is that with these ideas being so out there, I think the future of British traditionalism, just as a kind of cultural thing, is quite bright. Whether it comes in a kind of pagan form, like Survive the Jive style, or it comes in a Christian form, which can come in like kind of medieval Christian night LARP, or it can come in tea with a vicar style, kind of Anglican revivalism, I guess. I think it's pretty healthy as a cultural thing. As a political thing, I'm less optimistic. But when it comes to traditionalism, there's a lot you can do yourself. I mean, don't forget, Gwynon and Evola, well, I mean, they basically said, like, you know, you're not going to save the modern world from the Kali Yuga. You're already a man living among the ruins. There's no hope, according to both Gwynon and Evola, of kind of reviving those things in in the now, but you can follow that path yourself. And for those two, they literally just meant yourself as one man, as one individual. We're talking like tiny numbers of people here. You know, the numbers of people reading those guys back when they were alive, they may have known them by name, right? What we do now is so much more, you know, not just this channel, all of our friends and all the people in these spaces who talk about these sorts of ideas is so much bigger than it was then. So many magnitudes bigger than it was. If you think about Bowden in the pubs or whatever, whatever's happening now is bigger. And because of that, I think in the overall scheme of things, the future is brighter. Are you going to save the Chavette who talks about her holiday in Benidorm in the local hairdresser and goes back home and watches Netflix eating her pot noodle? No. But you could save yourself and your loved ones, basically. That's all it will really boil down to. John Lister says, will Britain go through another golden age, or is it over? I can't help shake the feeling that it is over. Well, I mean, again, I would want to separate Britain as a political unit, what is known as the nation state of Britain, and the British people. By which I mean the Scots, the Welsh, and the English, who are three separate people, of course, but together, you know, they may have to endure hardship. They may have to endure periods of subjugation. But I have no doubt that they will rise again. Of course they will. Of course they will. Don't forget the people from the Middle East that we've been talking about that dominate so much of our time, you know, the Jewish people, they were down to quadruple figures at some points in history. I'm talking like in less than 10,000 people in all of Europe. So they've had real lows, and yet they came back. I mean, I talk in Prophets of Doom about my dad's people, the Persians. They've had terrible lows. They were conquered several times in history by, you know, they took a beating by the Greeks. They got beaten by the Arabs. And in more recent history, they've had some pretty bad lows as well. They got a real thorough going over by the British during the time of the Qajars. And yet, they have endured. They always come back somehow. 700 years, Spain was under Arab rule, and yet they came back. So it's never over. Might be long and hard, but it's never over. And a people like the British, who took over the world, who basically invented 90% of the things you see around you, they're never going to be done. Not even close. Not even close. Redacted Brainwave says, the revamp is good. Trust the supreme leader, AA. Well, thank you very much, Brainwaves. Who done it? Thank Bolokov says, re-JFK talk from the deepest law. So this was on last week's Adam Curtis review, where we discussed JFK briefly. The Unspoken Kennedy Truth by Guyanot, while not conclusive, brings up some interesting facts about the nation of the Samson option and JFK's opposition to Dimona. Made more sense to me than the far-right CIA installing LBJ. Yeah, that is the most convinced I have been as well. I heard it on a show or a stream I was listening to, but maybe the source was the writer that you mentioned. To me, that has made the most sense as well. I would go along with that. Bobby says, Gluten Morgan, the same. Well, thanks for that. Mighty Sebastian says, "Hi, AA. I have been watching David Suchet's Poirot again with my parents." That was David Suchet with a little turned up moustache. It's Poirot. Used to be on TV in the 80s, in the early 90s, I remember. It ended around 10 years ago. And it's very obvious that much of this ethnic diversity is recent. Thoughts on Agatha Christie and this series in general? Well, I remember you, I mean, Poirot, I think, used to be on Sunday nights. I always remember it was kind of, I made the mistake of looking at the chat. And it's kicked off some petty nationalist sentiments on Britain inventing 90% of things around you. The fact of the matter is that most things you see around you were British inventions in one way or another. It's just a fact. I mentioned Hans Vogel, that German writer who argues the toss, right? And it may be that for each invention you can point to some European equivalent or some American patent or something. But the fact of the matter is that the ingenuity of the Brits, you have to give it to them. You cannot take that away from Britain as a nation. It is an incredibly industrious, creative people who have boundless. I mean, think of the odds against Britain as this island achieving what they've done and over-indexing as much as they've done in history. You think a few setbacks and a few kind of years of demoralization is going to expunge these people from history? You've got another thing coming. It doesn't work like that. I can't think of a example of a people with a track record like that just saying, all right, we're done now. We're fed up. We're going to leave history now because we got some guilt for the empire and it's like brown people's turn. I mean, okay, there could be a couple of decades where, you know, they have a few years being down or the numbers are down or whatever. But the idea that they're just going to give up and exit the stage, I think is a leftist fantasy more than anything else. I can't think of any examples of people who just give up like that. Absolutely not. And it's not just an appeal to history. It's an appeal to biology, if anything. So anyway, let's carry on. I've never quite understood this idea from the post-colonial types that, you know, there's going to be no fight back, basically. People are just going to, like, roll over. You know, it's your turn now. We're just going to give everything over. We're just going to roll over. It's not... There'll come a point where people just aren't willing to do that anymore. And it's actually happened sooner rather than later. Only took a few chimp outs and people tearing down statues. And the language now is very different from 4 years ago, isn't it? So they're not as bolshy now as they were 4 years ago. And as time goes on, they'll become less bolshy as people refine their spine. That is happening all over the place, especially the young people who watch channels like this, but also just young people in general. They're not having it. You don't get to say, you know, you belong to like the worst and most uniquely evil people in history. No, I don't. No, you don't. You belong to one of the greatest people ever to exist in history. Don't you forget it either. Anyway, about Poirot. I mean, I've never been that big on like the mystery genre. I kind of like playing detective games at some point, Sherlock Holmes and things like that. But I have fond memories of watching Poirot. I generally used to be on like Sunday nights, I seem to remember. I remember it being kind of rainy Sunday. Praro would come on. I found it kind of comforting. So maybe I'll have a little look at that old Praro series again. You said only 10. I seem to remember Praro being on much earlier than that. I thought it was like, when was David Suchet's Praro on? I've always loved the like the kind of Murder on the Orient Express idea, or so you started in the late 80s, and it went all the way until 2013. So it went way longer than I thought. God, there was a lot of them too. Okay, so they made like 4 episodes a year. I see. Okay. I might check those out again. I mean, I liked, for those like detective type things, I liked, I watched Praro back when it was on. There's an old Sherlock Holmes, where the doctor, you know, the Dr. Watson's got a mustache. I'm trying to remember the name of that Sherlock Holmes. You know, the one I'm talking about. That's a pretty good one as well. That's like, when I think of Sherlock Holmes, I think of that one. I don't think of Cumberbatch. I think of the TV series that used to be on. Not the modern one. What's his... Not Cumberbatch. What's his name? Anyone got the name for me? Of the old Sherlock Holmes? Yeah, the Jeremy Brett one. The Jeremy Brett one. Jeremy Brett's one. That's the one. Different... Just masterful, that one, the Jeremy. When I think of Sherlock Holmes, I think of Jeremy Brett version. So yeah, I mean, that's something. I mean, all of these things at some point or another I may get to. But probably with Halloween coming up, I may do something Hammer related soon. Higo says, the lack of authentic claim to the ancient wonders is exactly what I say about Arab Egyptians. People forget geological locations are not ethnic. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of controversy around who are the real Egyptians, isn't there? I am not qualified to get into that topic, I'm afraid. I just don't know enough about it. Although I've seen enough to believe that the current Egyptians are not those Egyptians. That's in time being stuff like that as well. They're different people. Certainly the ancient Egyptians weren't black, which some people claim as well. I mean, the thing is about the current Egyptians, there's question marks over the extent to which they're Arabs as well. Glubb talks about that in his short history of the Arab peoples. He says, like, there's who are these? These Egyptians have got question marks over them as to who they are exactly. Sir Keir Stormtrooper says, has Morcar played Hearts of Iron? Once or twice, but I don't have much memory of it, to be honest, Hearts of Iron. So I think the honest answer is no. Just once or twice. That's like a kind of... it's like Crusader Kings, but set during World War II, right? Or World War I era, is it? World War II. I seem to remember I played it once and appointed Ludwig von Mises as my economic advisor. Does that sound like the right game? Or is that something Arsenal? I can't remember. Goth Bureaucrat says, in your own view, what is wrong with Matt Goodwin? I could do with a bit more on it. Please do not refer me to Scrump or Evelyn, because their content is not for me at all. Well, unfortunately, Scrump and Evelyn is where all that content is. So, you know, as for Goodwin, I mean, the thing is that he seems to be pushing the envelope generally in the right direction. And given his recent appointment, I probably should not diss him too much. I'll just say that. Coney says, thoughts on doing an explanation video on Friedrich List? Yeah, I'm going to do that soon, whether it's next Monday or the Monday after. A list video is, you know, when I get the energy and time, I'll make a list one. Redacted Brainwave says, you've held the Pareto position. Dave has defended his own war of belief. I'd love to see you two having this conversation on stream. Well, I know Dave. I mean, the trouble is that Dave, as much as I love him, has an addiction. And his addiction is he only talks to leftists. Me not being a leftist, you know, Dave only talks to leftists. So, I mean, I'm not big on debates, but, you know, I still hold that when push comes to shove, I mean, look at the current situation with Israel. Did ideology win out? No, not really. Raw power. I mean, you know, the Scrump and Evelyn stream went over it. They destroyed, you know, they cucked the woke campus protesters. The left just shut up. Just using raw power. They literally bombed women and children. There was outrage, blah, blah, blah. Nobody gave a shit at the end of the day. Just power work, just power enforced what happened. And I've yet to see like a decent comeback on that. Power has been so primary and ideology so secondary that in this election, we've seen all sorts of rich and powerful people come out swinging for Trump. And they did not come out swinging for Trump because they suddenly, in the past 4 years, bought into MAGA ideology. JP says, Wales created the British Empire with the Tudor family, which was Welsh. I think you're underselling Wales. Claiming the Tudors as Welsh, therefore the British Empire was Welsh. It's a bit copy, I feel. I mean, I remember from my history lessons that Henry the Seventh, and then Henry the Eighth sent a man called Roland Lee because the Welsh were starting to get a bit rowdy in those times, and Roland Lee was dispatched to the March Lords to subjugate the Welsh further during that time. So I don't know, like from a purely Welsh nationalist perspective, the Tudors were not that nice to the Welsh. In fact, one of the worst periods, if you're a Welsh peasant or something, was under the Tudors, ironically. So, yeah, I mean, the thing is that as part of the larger power bloc, once the Welsh were kind of on board, you say this about the Scots as well, even more so about the Scots, they probably over-indexed in terms of, you know, contributing, I would say. I mean, the Scots, I would say massively over-indexed as engineers and inventors and things like that. But the, you know, the Welsh have got a good number of people who made huge contributions to history. In fact, one of the things I was surprised to learn was that a Welshman was basically responsible for the original refinery and drilling and refinery of oil in Iran. I mean, Iran, you could argue that the entire Iranian oil industry is down to the ingenuity of one Welshman. So, I mean, Wales has made huge contributions to world history, but under the rubric of being part of a bigger power, not as like representing Wales. an analysis on this show? And if so, what is your favorite episode? I was actually thinking of doing something on the goodies. I was reminded of them during the Beano and Dandy stream because they made the cartoon of the banana. There's a cameo from Tim Brooke Taylor in one of my childhood films, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. If you remember at the start, there's that guy who's made like the fake golden ticket machine, or the machine that can predict where the next golden ticket is or something. And that is Tim Brooke Taylor in that movie. I'd have to go back and watch some like goodies TV series or something. But in time, there's no reason why we can't cover all of these things, because let's face it, if we don't do it, nobody else is going to do it. I mean, this is the thing, is that you can no longer trust the actual media to remember these things. And if they did it, they'd be like, oh, well, you know, they were really a bunch of old racists or something. But, you know, increasingly, they tell a fictional version of the past as well. So, maybe I'll do something on the goodies one day. I mean, there'll be an episode in all of these things at some point or another. I still haven't talked about Monty Python. That's something we've talked about for a long time. Not only analyzing, appreciating Monty Python, but talking about some of the downsides of the world they created as well. Because I think Python are an underrated element in the undermining of the old British ruling class. JP says, English kings did far more to English people too. This doesn't always seem to make much sense. Power will always take action. I don't know. I don't recall Roland Lee being dispatched to subjugate the English in the same way as maybe local English historians will have similar stories. But there's all sorts of stories I remember being told. I remember being told. And again, so much of this stuff is just told orally, was just kind of passed down. But during World War One, the miners did not want to go and fight in the war. And Lloyd George went down and gave patriotic speeches all around the mining towns of the valleys to try to persuade and to kind of give a morale boost to get the boys to go and fight in World War One. So that was one of the things. In World War Two, the story I was always told, and this is actually unrelated to my dislike of Winston Churchill, but one thing I will say is that growing up, Winston Churchill was not a hero in Wales. Whenever Winston Churchill came up, somebody would always tell the story. They'd say, do you know what Winston Churchill said during the war? Let the rats get back in their holes. That line was repeated constantly when I was a kid. So in Wales, or certainly in the families that I knew, Churchill was not a hero, because Churchill was seen as someone who was disrespectful towards the Welsh. So, I mean, this is what it means to be a different people, right? The Welsh have a sense of themselves as being different and distinct from the English. And it's a big part of their self-identity. And it means that you have these slight differences in how certain things are remembered, right? That is always something to bear in mind when you think about Britain as a country. It's really four countries in one, you could say, if you include the Northern Irish. So anyway, Let's have a look. Is there any other super chats here? I think that is it. Thank you for joining me. I think an hour and a half is Wales is literally a different country. I mean, technically, it's a principality rather than a country. It's a principality, technically. But yeah, I mean, it's a different people. It's actually ethnically distinct people. Survive the Jive, I'm sure we'll be able to go into the DNA and all the rest of it, but they are different people. I mean, whether my own dislike of Churchill comes from the fact that he was never hailed as a hero in Wales is an interesting question. It possibly means I had less of a emotional thing to get over because I never kind of liked him in the first place, if that makes any sense. But maybe. I don't know. All right. Well, thank you very much, everyone. Like I remind you, Dubai Courses is the academic agency. Trivium especially will help you in all walks of life. It will, if you do an essay-based subject at university, it will certainly help your grades, especially if you take the foundations of research with it as well. It'll help you with your grades in school, but it'll even help you in your professional life too. All right. Pick up a course and I will see you. Well, tomorrow morning I have my video on Kamala Harris as a jobber. And then at 11 o'clock, there's Adam Curtis Review with Simon Roberts and Horace. So look forward to that. Bye all.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily fixed.